I said everything gonna be all right. I said everything will be all right.
All right. Good day, wherever you're listening from, and welcome to Indoor Air Quality Radio. It's IAQ Radio. It's Friday, May 8th, 2015. I'm back in the 1900s here this week. This week is episode 367. The Z-Man and I are coming to you from the Rio in Las Vegas. We've got a great show lined up today. We've been here all week at the RIA and IICRCA conferences. We'll use RIA and the council. And we are also joined in the studio with our engineer, John Faith. Yeah, got to have Faith. He's back in the studio. But here with me at the conference center, I've got Chuck Violin from the Restoration Industry Association. And I've got Brian O'Halleck from the Council of Associations. We've got the watchdog, Pete Consigli. And, of course, my co-host, the Z-Man, Cliff Zlotnick.
Hello, everybody. Good Friday.
All right. Before we get started, let's thank those marquee sponsors, John.
John Don Products. Or restoration and abatement contractor shop. Visit them at johndon.com.
Clean Facts, the number one information source for cleaning and restoration professionals. Check them out at cleanfactswithanx.com.
IAQ.net and Healthy Indoors Magazine, a free online digital magazine for industry professionals and consumers. Subscriptions available at IAQ.net. Please be sure to thank our sponsors for their support of IAQ Radio when you inquire about their products or services.
All right, we're going to jump right into it this week. Being on the road and with the great group that we have, we thought we'd just jump right into it and start with the questions. And what I'd like to do is kind of get a little summary of how things went this week from the perspective of the folks here. Let's start with Chuck Violin of the RIA. First Vice President, correct?
That is correct.
Still.
Still.
All right.
Still. Well, I think the RIA show has been going very well. A lot of good speakers, a lot of good attendance. Exhibitors were up, and I just think that there's a real positive move. I also think that having the IICRCA here at the same time has really helped that, too, so that's very nice.
Great. Brian, same question.
Well, we're our part of this event didn't go as well as we'd hoped. I think we've been supportive. I think there are some things that have gone real well. The attendees that are here have been happy with the presentations. They've been happy about being able to see the RIA show. Vendors here, some vendors are very positive, saying they were real happy to be in on the beginning of things, and just said, we didn't expect you to draw 1,000 people. We just didn't expect that, so we're good.
Okay. Well, we didn't draw 1,000, right? Is that well, that's what you're saying. Okay. Well, hey, that'll happen. You know, it's the first time out. Cliff?
I think the whole thing for me has been a blur because I'm running around. I have two badges. There's stuff I wanted to do over at IICRCA. There's stuff I wanted to do at RIA. And there were meetings that, you know, you had to attend and you had to make choices. And I wish that, you know, for me, I wish that I would have been able to do everything, had the opportunity to do everything that I wanted to do, and unfortunately I didn't have that opportunity because I just had to make some tough choices, and I did. I think the highlight of the week for me was probably the panel discussion that we just came out of. I mean, it was pretty lively. I mean, and in terms of cross-pollinization, I think you really had it in that room. There were a lot of RIA people, there were a lot of IICRC people, there were a lot of instructors, because I think the issue of water damage and care and the water damage standard and the consensus process is on the radar screen of RIA members and the industry at large.
And it was impressive turnout for 7 a.m. in Las Vegas.
Yes, the room was packed, 100-plus here.
On the East Coast, we were at 7 a.m. The Z-Man and I both, we moderated a panel on the changes to the S-500, particularly the air mover standard. Hey, I've got a friend of the industry and a friend of the show on here, but John, before we do that, I got to get his intro.
Let the dogs out!
Hoot, 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 hoot. All right. Pete Consigli, hey, the Disaster Restoration's Global Watchdog. Pete, give us some thoughts.
Hi, good morning, everybody. Or I would say good afternoon on the East Coast. Well, listen, I think that to follow up just on what Cliff said, that big group that was in there this morning for the S500 panel discussion, you know, what that basically proves is over the years, I think what all associations find out is that if you have a very interesting topic with good speakers, you know, people will come and they will listen to it really no matter what time it is and usually no matter where it is. And I think that's really kind of the challenge in the future as we move forward in developing the programs for the future conventions and events is that, you know, you get good speakers, you get timely topics, organize the meetings, you know, and market it to the members and the constituents and the people that you want to come and they'll attend it. So I thought that was interesting. Maybe a little bit later on in the show I'm making a few notes and I kind of like to weigh in on my thoughts and observations on the S500 topic in particular. The other thing really for me, the opening keynote presentation at the RAA convention yesterday was prefaced after President Stamper, you know, welcomed the attendees and opened the convention. He announced to our audience, to the members, that there's an agreement with the Canadian Restoration Group, and I hope I get the acronym right, but I think it's the ROC.
RCOC.
RCOC. And the gentleman, what's the gentleman's name, Chuck?
Ken.
Yeah, Ken from Paul Davis up there, who's kind of their spokesman for the group, got a few minutes to address their audience and talked about the cutting-edge work that they did in Canada, which potentially might not have been able to be done in the U.S. because of our antitrust laws, but the major restoration contractors got together and hired Lucien Toit, the Deloitte and Touche, to do a survey on the use of pricing methodology and whatnot in the marketplace and how these platforms are being set up and how it affects their margins. And it was very interesting, you know, on what came up, and I think it's going to lend to a kind of a lively debate and discussion in the industry that, from my perspective as being the educational chair for RAA, I'd like to carry that discussion on to the convention next year because I think it's a very timely topic that people are really into, and possibly what I was thinking about was getting all the major platforms for, you know, all the software guys, you know, Backware and Simbility and SimSol, et cetera, and kind of maybe have a panel next year similar to we had last year when they had the TPA panel. We got all the TPA guys on there. And to me, that's the kind of stuff that we should be having, because we got to find out what the members are interested in, what do they want to talk about, and then you get the right people up there and you put a format together to you know, get the issues out, similar to this S500 debate. So anyway, that's immediately what kind of came off the top of my mind.
Right. Brian, what's off the top of your mind here with respect to what happened this week? Anything new you learned? Anything you want to pass along to listeners?
Well, I did learn that short-term planning of a co-location event when one part of that event is already set schedules, as Cliff said, trying to work with the set schedules, it's pretty tough, and it takes a little bit more time than we had to give. And that's something we've learned, and if we're going to do a co-location in the future, we're going to do it a little bit differently.
Okay. I think that's a good thing. That's the only way you learn that is by doing it, you know. And I think there was a lot of things happening at once. I agree with Cliff. It was tough to see everything.
Oh, it was, but I think that there was really a great contrast, I think, between the two exhibit halls. You know, traditionally the RAA exhibit hall, you know, a lot of exhibitors, and you know, you don't really see the big stuff there. You don't see trucks, you don't see trailers and stuff like that, and a lot of times you don't see demonstrations. And the CRCA exhibit hall did have the big stuff. You know, they had trailers, they had big trucks, and they had the demo areas, so that there was a lot of hands-on demonstration of cleaning processes and restoration processes and those sorts of things. So there's a really, they're both really, really good, but they're just a little bit different. And I think that, as Pete said, in the future, I think incorporating, you know, the best of both is a good idea.
I think people love hands-on. They love hands-on, especially people in this industry. And there was a lot. They had done a good job with that over at the Consoles Exhibition Center. Chuck, I don't want to leave you out. Any thoughts on the exhibit halls primarily, I think, was the thing I'm curious about. What were your thoughts on that? Anything new? I have some thoughts, but I want to get you first.
Well, I'm kind of in the same place that Cliff was mentioning. I've been in meetings for the last 2 days. So even with my own booth, my organization has a booth there. I have not been able to spend but 5 minutes at the booth, and so I've just been pretty much in meetings.
I noticed some different types of vendors, exhibitors than I normally would see. You know, there were people who had a lot more software-related exhibitors. So that seems to be a big trend within the industry, more software. I ended up having lunch with a guy yesterday. They have an app that you know, helps a disaster restoration company go in. They take a photo, sort of like how are they recording? There's some name of that, but people were able to like take a phone and hold it up and live broadcast the Pacquiao fight for free to their friends or to whomever. That technology exists now, you know, and so people here are developing apps that can help disaster restoration people, for instance, walk into a home immediately after a disaster, take a video camera that's on your phone, basically, and then take a video, a quick 1 minute or 2 minute video of the room, and then upload that to the claims adjuster so they see immediately what you see. You know, sometimes it's a problem to get them out on the job site quick enough, so they immediately get that video and get that feedback. And then they're tying it in nowadays so that from your phone, you can actually put in all your measurements and then you can have that tied to your invoicing and have that tied to your equipment, to your personnel. So there's a lot of that interesting stuff coming on as we get more in line with the millennials or whomever's out there developing. One of the guys was actually one of the sons of Kent Rauhauser's son, has an app that he's developed for water damage.
Response plans, yeah.
Yeah, so that's one of the things. The other thing I saw, and I want you guys to let me know, is this common? There were a lot of other types of vendors. Say, for instance, there were people doing exercise things and how to be healthier and more health insurance people and ancillary type services to business people in general. Is that something you've seen a lot in the past with these types of shows? Or
I think there's trending in that direction, absolutely. Okay. Of course, I think you could trend a lot faster with just some practical things, with not having as much food available as there is at these things. I mean,
yeah.
Good Lord, there's a lot of food.
Yeah, there is. Brian, particularly at the Council of Associations exhibit hall, I saw some different types of exhibitors than I've ever seen anywhere else.
Well, it's funny, the things that we consider a filler at a large show, someone who's got phone gadgets, somebody who's got different kinds of health aids or whatever, those guys actually did an incredible business, and an awful lot of people came over from the RIA show and walked away with bags of gadgets, where we thought, boy, this is kind of an odd duck for our show. Turned out to be quite a draw.
So that's what you were referring to earlier. Okay. All right. Yeah, I saw one. They had like a massage machine that you put on your back or whatever, and it gave you some kind of electric stimulation, and people were loving it. You know, they were going over. Of course, they always have a pretty girl standing there, you know, showing.
Yeah, but after all, we're in a white-collar business, right? All of us are walking around.
Exactly right.
And, right, you know, none of us have to lift heavy equipment or do anything physical. So I think the focus on us, you know, as a person,
right,
I think was good. As Chuck said, I think you probably are going to see more of that because, you know, we're an aging population. You know, we all have gray hair here.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Well, I saw a similar thing on the way back to my hotel room last night, a young, very attractive lady with a massage thing, but I'm not sure that was quite the same thing that Brian had.
Okay. We are at the Rio, but they've been pretty good hosts, though. Everything went fine, I thought, with the hotel. Yeah, the rates were good off the rooms.
We, you know, IAQA had their convention here at the Rio about 5 or 6 years ago, and it was actually that whole convention was where the IACRCA was now, so we didn't have as long of a walk. Because I got to tell you, it takes a long time to get anywhere. It's a long walk in Vegas, and that walk, a lot of the people were saying, "Boy, to go all down to the RAA and." Well, you're burning some calories, you know. But I think that Rio did some little remodeling after that last show. I'm kind of enjoying coming back here. I kind of think the suites are good and the food seems to be good. It seems to be a good venue. The prices were right. So, you know, I mean, Vegas is Vegas, right?
Yep. It worked out pretty well. Now, I was surprised to see a large contingency of Australians here. Probably 20.
Let me weigh in on that, and I don't know, Chuck, you know, So what's happened is you had two major groups, and one of the groups that kind of came was maybe more affiliated with the ISCRCA, and the other one was with the REA, which was kind of good, and it was probably at least 20, and I think the one group that came over had Larry Carlson from Phoenix, and they got a little Chucky DeWald, and they did a session that they did for was 2-day kind of a training program for them on drying methodology. It wasn't really building science, but something associated to that. I thought that was great. So they actually came in for some extra education. It was about 20 of them in the room. I stopped in and saw that. The Australian group, led over here by Ashley Easterby and Duncan Bennett. Duncan's on our board. Is really kind of a precursor to REA having a chapter and rolling out an event this fall in October in Australia around their In Clean or their Oz Clean show. And I think, you know, with Aussies and groups from the UK coming over here to shows, you know, they don't always come every year, but usually every couple of years they come over really just essentially to see what's going on. You know, walk the exhibit hall, look at the sessions, networking. Most of these groups when they come over here for 7 to 10 days and they travel around the country and they take the opportunity, like one of the Aussie groups, they went to ASD House, did an ASD course up at Dry East. They went and visited Injector Dry. They went down to Fireline in Phoenix. And I know that one of the other groups went to Bartwood Construction. Laurie Young is the chair of the Contents Council for REA. They visited her plant facility and shared some stuff. And I think that's what association membership really is all about. It's members sharing with members, so how they can, improve their businesses. And I think that's probably the biggest intent and the reason why the Aussies came over here really is for education and to, you know, see what their counterparts are doing. And it looks like, we'll be going over there in the fall. So.
And to tag off of what Pete's saying, in the past, I think a lot of it has been more casual. Let's find out what's going on. I can tell you that I think it's a lot more directed now. Ashley Easterby having won the Martin King Award last year, Duncan Bennett being on the board, RIA board now, and they've invited me to speak in Australia at their event coming up in the fall. And I know that we're working very hard to have a greater presence in Australia at the same time that we're working hard to have a greater presence in Canada and then in the UK. Having RIA become more of a truly an international reach than we have in the past. Ashley having it rather than just saying that it's there.
Sure.
So I think that a lot of that is very intentional.
Okay. And then there was, like you said, there were kind of two groups. I know Jenny Boyne-Miles on the IICRC board and then the Council of Associations folks. Are you reaching out to the Australians? Is that just something that happened organically?
Well, they're a member.
Oh.
So, yeah, it's happening organically.
Okay. They're a member of?
Of the Council.
Council of Associations. I didn't know that. Which group? Is it SCREE? What's it called?
Specialized Cleaners and Restorers Industries.
Yeah, they call it SCREA, but I don't know.
SCRA. Specialized Cleaners and Restorers Industry Association.
Okay, great. I didn't know they had become a member.
I wasn't sure I could spell those initials out.
Yeah. Cliff, let me turn
that. That's why they have a watchdog in the show, because we pay attention.
That's right. Thank you. Much appreciated.
Sometimes keeping secrets is easy. And for me this time, keeping secrets was hard. And I had the, I guess, honor and privilege of being involved with selections of some of the RIA awards that were given away. And, you know these people and you're quite close to them and, you're involved with their selection and you know, it's a voting process, and, you know, it's blind, so you just vote, and that's all there is to it. And, you know, you kind of see them, and you know it's going to happen, and, you know, like, it's a good thing, but you can't, because they don't even know that they've been nominated. So I found that a little bit difficult.
Yeah, can I tag off of that, Joe?
Go for it.
So I had made a couple of notes here. One of the things that REA has been doing for several years is we've had an awards banquet where we induct our latest advanced certificates, CRs, WLS, the CMPs, et cetera. But we also give out some of our association awards. One of them is the Golden Quill Award, which is for the best article submitted to our trade journal, Cleaning and Restoration. Last year, we renamed that the Patricia L. Harmon Award after Patty Harmon, who's the editor with the association for many years. Now she's the editor of Claims Magazine, which I think is great. She's doing a great job with claims. And so the first recipient this year was Barb Jackson for an article that she wrote on contents. It was really terrific. And actually, when she got up there to receive the award, we tried to get her to say something at the microphone, and I think she was pretty taken by it. She actually didn't have any comments. She just walked off the stage. It was great.
Wow.
Then what Cliff was talking about, the other are the two Phoenix Awards, which is, and we had a lot of submittals this year for the award for restoration and then one for reconstruction. And a company, Kelman Restoration from Michigan, this is the sixth time they've won the award over the years, which was pretty amazing. It was a restoration job on a big dome, and it was pretty amazing. And then the other job.
Me and Joe can relate because it was back crap.
It was right. But then the other job was the other job was really very interesting. It was won by a company from Seattle called Charter Restoration, and it was a job that they did on the San Juan Islands. And of course, Brian, coming from that neighborhood, knows this. And of course, I lived up there for 4 years when I used to work for Dry's in the late 80s and early 90s. The San Juans are one of the most beautiful places in the world, particularly in July and August. And it was a job that was done on a remote island with no power. And there was a cistern. They had to do a reconstruction rebuild on it. It was really just showed the innovation of the restoration industry. So that was great. But really the highlight of the award, I wanted to actually take the opportunity to say something about this now, because Cliff, since he's all over the place and has so many commitments, and he was in the obviously in your council, the council association board meeting and dinner, he was unable to attend our event, or he would have, because he has every year. And so the most prestigious award that the REA can give, it's kind of like a lifetime achievement award, is the Marty L. King Award. And Cliff and myself have both been honored with that over the years. And last year's winner, which was Ashley Easterby, basically gives the announcement and gives the award to the recipient this year, and it kind of goes like that from year to year, and it's the only one award that's kept secret. It's kind of like Price Waterhouse, and only a few people know before it's announced, and the guy is going to get it. We do everything we can, and we have a whole lot of co-conspirators to make sure that, you know, that he's going to be so choked up he can hardly speak, and it's really been like that every year. And So the award winner this year was Mike Goldberg from Restore Corps, who's just been an unbelievable, amazing volunteer. And we collaborated with his son, Andrew, who had a bunch of other commitments and wasn't coming. And he actually basically flew in last night just to be here. We brought him up to the stage so he can hug his dad, and we took pictures. And, you know, Cliff knows the Goldbergs for many years. They're from the Philadelphia, Harrisburg area,
Pennsylvania,
and you know. But we did two new traditions this year for the Marty L. King Award. The first thing is we took a page off the Heisman Trophy, and we had any of the past recipients that were in there come up to the stage and welcome the new guy in, and we're going to continue to do that. And then the other thing is we're going to be doing a full write-up in CNR Magazine now from here on out. So Mike, I said, Mike, you started when two new traditions started, so that was really something. And one last little thing. I'll hold off on another comment. Maybe it's part of my wrap-up. But I want to kind of talk about some ideas that I kind of have. I'm already starting to think ahead for next year's convention, you know, and how we're all going to work together and make this thing a blowout. And maybe we'll leave that for the end. So don't anybody sign off. You better stay on, or you have to download the podcast.
We'll save that for the end in the roundup. And we're close to halftime. I just want to make sure before we move on to the next subject that anything else new that or interesting that you want to comment on, Cliff or Chuck or Brian? I mean, anything that kind of caught your attention? We're stopped.
Well, I know behind the scenes we were talking earlier about the RCOC, the Canadian council up there. And I know that RIA is moving closer with those guys.
Okay.
Memorandum of understanding with that organization. But also we're looking at kind of a three-way cooperative with a trade event that they have going on in the fall in Canada, the PLR.
Okay.
And Murray has been running that thing for the last 2 years, and I know that RIA is getting more involved with that. So that'll be kind of nice.
And they've had success with the insurance industry, as I understand it. I don't know exactly how that works. I don't know how much you can talk about it, but is that, have they been able to work on what, pricing? Or?
Well, RCOC is an advocacy group.
Okay.
They're not a trade association.
They're an advocate. Okay.
Right. And it's made up of about 8 major players in Canada, in the Canadian market, who put some money to have this research done by Deloitte and just on pricing. And so they did it. They went to the insurance carriers up in Canada and got them actually to listen to them. And so now they're moving forward with that. And separately, Dan Murray started a trade show up in Canada, up in Toronto, with a PLR, property loss, PLR, property loss restoration organization up there. And so rather than having 3 different entities, RA being one of them, you know, trying to do things, you know what, let's see if there are some ways that we can work closer together on this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what's going to be happening.
Okay. Sort of what the Council of Associations has envisioned doing, Brian, you know, working together to try and help the industry in general both unify and also move forward. Anything else new on that front that you can tell us?
Well, it just makes sense. Rather than having multiple entities all working to come to the same end, why not get together? Everything moves faster and smoother. And it just makes sense.
Did you have elections here this year? Is that
coming up in September?
Coming up in September, so that'll be in the fall. Okay, so you're in the presidency until the fall.
Yep.
All right. Lucky guy. All right. What I'd like to do, John, do me a favor, John. Let's go to our halftime. We want to thank all of our sponsors. When we come back, Pete's got a couple things he wants to mention, but I think we want to talk a little bit about this debate we were just part of here. I think that was a very interesting part of this week, and I think, you know, we could probably give some information to listeners that might help them out. Go ahead, John.
The Indoor Air Quality Association, a nonprofit multidisciplinary organization dedicated to promoting the exchange of indoor environmental information through education and research. Visit them at iaqa.org. Gray Wolf Sensing Solutions. We use advanced sensor software technology and embedded computers to provide superior environmental test instrumentation. Visit them at wolfsense.com.
Legends Environmental Insurance Services, the experts in insurance for environmental consultants and contractors for over 20 years. Check them out at legends-enviro.com.
And of course, our marquee sponsors, John Don Products, where restoration and abatement contractors shop. Visit them at johndon.com.
Clean Facts, the number one information source for cleaning and restoration professionals. Check them out at cleanfactswithanx.com.
IAQ.net and Healthy Indoors Magazine, a free online digital magazine for industry professionals and consumers. Subscriptions available at IAQ.net. Please be sure to thank our sponsors for their support of IAQ Radio when you inquire about their products or services.
All right, we're back. Second half of our interview, we've got Chuck Biolan, First Vice President Brian O'Halleck of the RIA. Brian O'Halleck, President of, is it Chairman?
Chairman.
Chairman of the Council of Associations. We've got the Global Watchdog with us and the Z-Man. Cliff, we just finished moderating a discussion debate on the S-500, and it's been a big topic in the industry. You know, the fact is IICRC is moving toward revising the S-500, the Professional Water Damage Restoration Standard. We started out with Howie Wolf going through the actual current document, and most of the discussion was on the air mover section. That's been the most controversial part. So we started with a PowerPoint of what's in the current document, what's proposed for the new document. And then up in the front we had people that are for the changes to the air mover section, people against the changes. So we had, let's see, Don Reed was on.
We had Ron Reese.
We had Darren Adema. We had
Jeremy Reed. What was Nick's last
name? Nicholas
Willems.
All right. Sorry, Ron. I'll get it right.
We had four people. And I guess.
Hey, don't forget Mr. Chairman Howie Wolf.
That's right. Correct. Howie did his intro.
The primary issue was whether or not it should be done by linear feet or by square feet in terms of sizing equipment for, you know, various drying projects. And it's kind of amazing that, I think that we all do this. You know, two people can read the same sentence and come away from that sentence thinking two different things. And what happens is you have a pretty thick document, and, you know, people look at it and they interpret it a little bit differently. They have different opinions based on what's there. And I think one of the challenges is that, unlike some other standards and some other standard writing organizations, this is a prescriptive standard which tells people how to do something. And my opinion is that while it's sold as a guidance document, I think that it really handcuffs the contractor. You know, I believe that the contractor should be making the judgment calls when he's out in the field and not have to look into a book and know what to do. And certainly that contractor, if he's properly trained and properly equipped and has good judgment and good experience, I think he should be making the calls.
Yeah. Pete? So listen, I didn't get a chance. I told Howie, they kind of ran out of time in the meeting. I had a couple of comments that I would have liked to have weighed in on. You know, Jerry Remitz made an observation, comments up there. He talked about first people normally observe, then after people make observations, they make a proposal, and he said after someone, you know, proposal's made in the discussion, then normally it leads to change. I like to modify that. I told Jeremy I told him he'd have to listen to the podcast. But I think that people make observations. After that, they make suggestions. Then from the suggestions that people want from consensus, then you'll start to get to these proposals, which will lead to change. So having said that, I'd like to weigh in with my comments that I would have made in the room, and actually it's probably more appropriate to make here because it's for a wider audience. One observation is that I believe the only two people in that room that have been involved with the ISCCS 500 standard setting process from its very beginning up to now, I think it's me and Cliff. I didn't see anyone else in there. I could be wrong. That was there from the very, very beginning, that actually Cliff and myself were on the first editing committees, et cetera. So what I want to give the audience, Joe, is my observations on the entire standard setting process for the industry, not just the S500, what I observed in that panel discussion where I think the core issues are. So here it is. Here's a brief history. When the very first S500 was done, it's almost 25 years ago, and it was published, it's called, the first edition was the S500-94. Every standard, every S500 has always had jugular issues, because these are the jugular issues to today, so I want to kind of try to connect the dots, so bear with me. The biggest issues facing the industry, the opposing viewpoints, were should it be called a standard or a guideline? Okay, and I don't actually think it actually would have mattered in the day, because even if you called it a guideline, there was nothing else out there. It was basically the standard of care. The second discussion around that was, should we write a prescriptive or procedural standard, or should it be something that was called results-oriented or performance-based? Okay, and this is going to lend Cliff to the comments he just made now, and it became a procedural standard, and that's how it's written. It's been for all these years. Actually, during that time, the CleanFacts and John Downey started CleanFacts, they had a thing in there called the Great Debate, and Larry Cooper and Denny Jensen actually had a great debate on those issues. So it was really amazing. So for those of you, that was it. Now what happens in the end of the decade in the 90s? The second standard, S500, was 99, with the second edition. What happened then is they only updated two chapters, so it was an update version. And what were the big issues then? Well, there were two sections that were done. The ANSI style formatting was in there. It was a much better presented written document.
But the big issue then was, should the standard be separated from the reference guide? And that actually, Cliff actually brought that up for the very first one, but they brought it up again. And should there be a dissenting opinion or viewpoint? It was brought up, you know, even with the Supreme Court judges, they published a dissenting viewpoint. And again, that was shot down. And what was said was, people who wouldn't allow a dissenting viewpoint in, people who were contributors to the document actually took their name off the document and wouldn't have the name in the document. So for 25 years, we've been saying these are the same issues that have been kind of coming out there. After that, what happened is, when they started to go the ANSI process, the third edition, which was in 2006, they started with a clean sheet of paper. So what happened? We started a clean sheet of paper, the first standard, right? Second standard was just an update, two chapters. Start all over again. Third edition, ANSI process. There, the big debate was what did the ANSI process mean? Because we're kind of trying to figure it and learn it out. That document went out. And actually, on that document, I was on the editing committee for the first two documents. The committee invited me to be a participant in the standard on bias. Actually, was my role in the third one. If you look in those documents listed. So now here we are with the fourth document, which is just an update. So we went clean sheet of paper, update. Clean sheet of paper, update. Maybe I'll see where I'm going with this, all right?
Okay.
So now the issue is, those issues that I just said, those are big picture issues. Big picture. All right? So that's, do we want to be prescriptive or performance-based? Do we want it to be called a standard or a guideline? Do we want a dissenting viewpoint? All right, these are big picture issues.
They are.
What are these guys? These guys are in the weeds today. You know, now I say this with all due respect. It's a discussion needs to be had, support discussion. But you know what that says to me? That says to me is, has our industry digressed that we got so far in the weeds that we held up the process to get this document out? Okay? So, what's going to happen? Number one, the document's going to be published. It's going to be out there. We know that. All right?
Sooner or later.
They talk about the document as being a working document, a living document, a teaching document. All right? But what's happening is, they talk about how to do the work. That's what a procedural document. I think it's time to change the question. Instead of the question being a how question, it should be a what or a when question. And this is what I mean by that. And those are my observations. And now here's my suggestion, which may lead to a proposal and may lead to change. I would like to suggest that the next version of the S500, which will be the fifth edition, and number one, they separate the standard from the reference guide. Number two, they allow for dissenting opinion and viewpoint, majority opinion, minority opinion. Number three, they move to the model of performance-based. These are the what's and the when's. What do I mean by that? Right now, this whole discussion is how to dry the wall line by line by line by line by line, and this is where we've gotten after 25 years. What if we went to a what or a when question? What does it mean for the wall to be dry? How do you know when the wall is dry? That's what a performance-based document is. That means that the document will be very small. And you know what you do? You leave the reference guide and all the educators who are in that room to then tell the people how to best get there. Describe where you want the end zone to be. They can decide how they want to take the ball down the field. And I think, not that this stuff's going to go away, there'll still be debate and opinions, but I think it shows the growing and the maturing of the industry. So Jeremy, on your behalf, those are my observations, those are my suggestions. I hope it leads to a proposal that will lead to change. But you know what, guys? I appreciate the debate, I appreciate the discussion, and it needs to be had. What that means is people care about the issues, and what that does, that engages the industry.
That's right.
The leaders of the industry should make sure that the debate is meaningful, it's orchestrated, it's fair, and it's balanced. Anyway, and I would encourage you to continue to do that. Thanks for the extra time on that, Jeff.
All right. Well, thank you, Pete. I think that was
Gary thing is, I agree with virtually every word that he said. And the thing is, you had way more patience than I did. I got off after the first one that I had enough.
Couldn't do it, huh?
Well, that was the cutting room floor edition.
Was Howie on the first one?
Even Larry Cooper was. I'll tell you who the food involved. Larry Cooper, Jeff Bishop, Claude Blackburn, Claudia Ramirez, Cliff Slotnick, myself, and the first attorney was Robert Cooper, that's Larry Cooper's brother, who had started a carpet cleaning business. That was the first editing committee, and that was it. Jim Holland didn't get involved. He came in the second edition, 90, and a lot of other people. So It's been an interesting ride. It's a great process. For all the debate and everything we have, this is it. Howie kind of summed it up at the end. That's what the process is. That's what the consensus is. Ben Franklin described that. He said to the 13 colonies, when America was founded, he said, gentlemen, we either hang together or we hang individually.
Yep. Isn't that the truth? Chuck, Brian, anything you'd like to add on that? I thought it was
as somebody that's not in the restoration business, I enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah.
There were good points made. Good points made by people in the audience. Very well done. You guys did a great job. Thank you.
Well, you're kind. And originally, we were going to try not to have audience comments. I think there was a certain amount of nervousness. And because it's an ANSI process, you have to be careful what you say. You have to be careful what you do. You have to be careful of the terminology, that's utilized. But I think it went over well, and I think it's good that the people that are involved with the committee actually get to see the reaction of the group of contractors and hear their feelings.
I think it would have been nice, though, if we would have had Pete give that history and the sequence of events. You went from a blank piece of paper to a revision to a blank piece of paper to a revision, and some of the comments that came up, I don't know if they were blank piece of paper comments, but they were pretty significant.
Well, I got in there a little late, but just as it started, I had to go all the way up to the front, sit in the front row. You're just like when you're late to church, you sit in the front row. But I enjoyed it. I told Ron Reese, I thought Ron Reese really did a wonderful job. He was very elegant. Yes. Darren O'Deem, and no one has more passion than him when it comes to this subject. I didn't really know Nick, but I thought he handled himself well. And I thought, Jeremy, I understand it. Jeremy was very respectful to the process. He's taken a lot of heat on what he's done. But, this is part of what the ANSI process is about, basically.
The scary thing is it's just so complicated. To me, the whole process just seems overly complicated. It's gotten more and more and more complicated.
The process of writing a standard or drawing a building.
No. Personally, I think the process of drawing a building has pretty much been the same.
Okay.
But I think that since we've had the standard and you have all these people in there, it's like Pete said, they're in the weeds. And once they get to the weeds, they get in the dirt. Once they get, it gets underground. You've heard you can't see the forest from the trees. And then, you get to the point where they call it barking because you can't see the tree from the bark. They just get so close and so close.
You've been a big, you've been critical of made-up science, rightfully so. I think part of the reason they're in the weeds is it's hard to do stuff.
Made up stuff. Junk science and his MUS is made up stuff, which is only based by junk science.
What had happened was, I was getting ready. I was in the wrong room because I guess they changed the room on us this morning.
That's right.
So I was over in the exhibit hall, and Sonny Bass, comes in. He's head of training for Paul Davis Restoration, and he sits down. I said hi to him, and so on and so forth. And he was early for the debate, and I said something to him, and it kind of set something off in my mind, and I kind of let part of it out in there. They're talking about something that they really haven't seen. They're talking about air and where you put it and how much of it.
The funny thing is when
you introduce the smoke into the air and you see where it goes and you see what it does and you see what happens and you see what doesn't happen, it will change your view. And I showed him some slides that we had discovered back in 2003 accidentally. It's not like we thought about it. We didn't. We discovered it accidentally. And I showed him the photographs, and he just like looked at this and said, wow. And what I feel bad about is I tried to introduce that to the Water Damage Committee at an RAA convention in Palm Springs, and I was denied by 5 minutes.
Well, you have a good point, because and it gets back to the science, and that's, I think, where a lot of the argument is. But air, the science of air movement is not simple. It's not as simple as you create a vortex, you do this, you do that,
square room,
and a square room, precisely. And you're correct there, and we run into that a lot with respect to restoration, excuse me, and trying to get particulate out of airs and clean rooms, etc. Air doesn't move in as predictable a manner as people think. It's very turbulent, and especially when you're in a building with all these different, you know, they're talking about offsets and insets and so on and so forth. You're correct. So I think, but those are the kind of things, I think Pete brings up a good point. It's kind of, that's the stuff we've got to do when we get to put the sheet of paper out. We go, okay, let's start from the beginning.
Hey, Joe, a couple things before, I know we're probably pretty soon going to move into the roundup. So listen, I do have a couple things I think would be interesting for the audience. Something that's new, REA just rolled out a brand new website. I mean, we literally just in conjunction with the convention. But on the website, there is a link. The other thing that we did is we now have put out for open public review from May 1st until June 5th or something like that, about a little over a month, the Certified Restore curriculum document, which has been in, by the time it's formally published, it'll take been a five-year process. So if you actually go to the REA homepage, there's a link, and anyone in the industry can download the document. There's a confidentiality thing you agree to, and then you can provide feedback and input back to the committee. So it's open for public review. Now, I visited the Global Resource Center on Monday when I got into Las Vegas. I spent a few hours with David Rasa and Tony Wheelwright, and made a formal offer to the IICRC to review the document. And Tony suggested it was going to be the Education Committee, and he's going to let me know who will do that. Request from IEQA and ASHRAE, and also the AIHA. As a matter of fact, Chuck was in the room when the ASHRAE people requested it. So we're going to be providing a venue for them to actually review the document. And REA is hoping that by the end of this year, we'll publish that document, which will represent 5 years of work. And so why is all this important? Well, that process we went through to develop that curriculum essentially is going to be the body of knowledge for the restoration industry, which will include a lot of the components of these moving parts that we're talking about with the S500. And it's went through a very rigorous process that started with an idea that went to 9-people committee that then went to the first peer review of about 35, 40 people. It's a very intense and rigorous peer review, and plus Marty King and myself also were the general peer reviewers too. And then after that, it went to open request to the industry. We got about a half a dozen. And now we're into the stage where we're going to basically put it out aggressively for one final general review, where you can basically go to our website and get it. And once that's done and it gets published, then that's basically a body of knowledge. And the certification and education around the various disciplines of restoration will be developed about that. This afternoon, this is day two of our conference. And I, since we're in here with the IEQ radio show with the 3-hour time difference, I had to miss our second keynote speaker, Tim Miller, which I guess I'll have to go take a look at the PowerPoint. But the closing general session of the day at the RAA is a town hall meeting. And what the convention committee decided to do this year was to have the chairs of the councils, the Restoration Council, Canadian Council, Environmental, et cetera, provide a venue with the members to basically talk about what the council's working on, what the issues, the viewpoints, and have an interaction. So that's kind of going to be a way that we're going to basically close everything out. So
all right, yeah. let's turn. Let's go over to the roundup. Move 'em on, hit 'em up, hit 'em up. Move 'em on, hit 'em up, rawhide. Cut 'em out, ride 'em in, let 'em out, cut 'em out, ride 'em in, rawhide. Maury Astley's here too. From Maury's drop, come in from the Council of Associations. He's their executive director, I believe is the right title, Maury, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, we go by president, but it doesn't
president
matter.
All right, that's right.
Yeah,
Chairman Halleck, President Astley.
All right.
Maury, give us your final thoughts.
Well, as Brian said, we were a little disappointed at the attendance and the booth sales, but it was our first go-around. But what I am proud of is that there's a couple things that I see as our missions, and one is to serve our Council of Association members. One of our members came because they're changing their name, and they came to promote. That's the Canadian Flooring Cleaning and Restoration Association. As you mentioned earlier, we had Australians here. Jenny Boymall brought a group in, had a meeting, and supported us. We also had some really good presentations, although we didn't have as much as we want in a robust educational set of tracks. We offered some skilled technical training. We offered training on how to run your boards, which is what our association members need. And we also had some on how to improve your business, which is what our members need. So that's kind of our goal in the future going forward is we want to give our members a chance to learn and to help their own membership grow. And we want to provide things for our certified firms, which is networking, education, scholarships. In addition to our normal scholarship program, this time we gave them some money back on their attendance, which they could use to purchase from our vendors. And that kind of went along with our theme this time, which was make money, save money. And our next one is going to be working together, learning together. And so that means a more emphasis on what we're going to do in the area of education. And we hope to have at least a couple tracks that people can choose from. And there'll be technical training. There'll be more training on how to run your business and how to run your association.
Great. Thank you, Mark. Much appreciated. Hey, I think Pete will introduce. We got another guest coming in.
Yeah, so Mark Savitelli just walked into the room.
Good to have you.
He's the executive director for RIA, and I remember he's done a wonderful job. This is his first convention that he handled. He really was great. Great activity in the exhibit hall, sessions, everything. But anyway, Mark, why don't you just share with the listeners? We're in the roundup phase, kind of your thoughts of everything, and weigh in. You got the mic.
Sure. I would say it's been a great show. We've been really pleased with the number of attendees that we've had, and we've had more exhibitors this year than we've had in a number of years. We cracked over 100 exhibitors, and we were really thrilled about that. You know, walking the exhibit floor, having a chance to talk to a lot of our vendors who are out there, you know, they're really pleased, and that's important. And what's equally important is that you're seeing a lot of the members sitting on the floor, having the opportunity, getting the chance to learn about these products and services. And look, it's Las Vegas. There's a big distraction sitting right outside these doors, and yet there are people in there making deals, talking business. You know, that's what you want. That's a sign of a successful show, particularly in this city. And, you know, with the great attendance, with having our friends at the IICRC across the hall as well, too, and the opportunity for both groups to intermingle, that's been a real positive. And, you know, I've heard a number of comments from both sides saying, you know, having these two groups here, you know, we need to build on that. And hopefully as an industry, we can build on that. Because I think clearly that's what the desire is stating out there.
That's good to hear.
So listen, I think one of the things that we actually didn't mention, and we would be remiss if we didn't, and I'm looking right into Maury's eyes as I say this, but Maury and David Rauza organized a special, well, I guess we call it an MOU reception. And so we had a reception yesterday from 4 to 5 o'clock, the entire IICRC board, the Council of Association board, the RAA board, you know, and their key management and staff were all there to network and just kind of get to know each other. And, you know, the last show that we had on this, we had the old Henry Ford quote in there. And that Henry Ford quote, and Cliff, you put it in your, it was in your blog. It said, when you get together, that's a good start. When you come together, that's progress, and working together is success. So here's how I'd like to kind of put it in context. I think that MOU reception that we had was a good start. It was getting together. Seems the next part of the phase of this is where we have to come together to have progress. And to me, that's a sit-down meeting between all the parties where you basically sit down across the table, look at each other, and you get a more definitive MOU, not only of how REA can work closely with the Institute and our shareholder status is in progress, and we're hoping by the fall that our shareholder will be approved and we'll be able to participate as a shareholder. But talking with Maury the other day, it seems that the Council of Associations and REA should have a separate MOU that addresses how we work together, what Brian brought up earlier, so that we can have a successful kind of co-located show or however we're going to work together into shows for the future. And I think that's where there could be some progress. And then eventually when we get to the point we can work this out and, you know, move past decisions that were made years ago that we couldn't change and we had to deal with them, but where we move closer to that clean sheet of paper, then we'll actually be working together and that'll be success, you know, and that's not going to happen tomorrow. But if we keep moving in that direction, I think eventually it will happen. And I'd like to make a suggestion as part of my closing deal. Next year is the 70th anniversary of RAA. We've been around for seven decades. And quite frankly, the roots of RAA are really all the shareholder associations of the IICRC, the Council of Association. Five in particular is the CCINW, where Brian came from, the CFI, the New England group, the Mid-South group, and the New York group. Those are the essence. They probably have maybe over 50% of the presidents of our association up to 70 years. I talked to Mike West. I've been talking to all our past presidents. We want to have a big major blowout next year. We want to put all differences beside. We want to hit the reset button, and we want to have this big, huge gala event and have some special awards and try to bring the industry together. And we need to try to find a way of how we can make that happen. The founders of this industry, which reside in all the shareholder associations and really in all the organizations we've been talking about, will probably never get another chance to do that. You know, we usually do it every decade. And so this is it. And this is we're in the middle of the passing of the baton to the next generation, to Gen Xers and the millennials that have taken it from the baby boomers and for the greatest generation. And I think this is important that we don't ever forget our roots. We don't forget where we came from. And the fact is all these groups that are trying to get this MOU, if we look into a mirror, we are each other, and we should never forget that. And so even though we've had issues and stuff, I think we've discussed them openly and forthright. And, okay, fine. Well, if there weren't challenges, we'd probably never have a reason to get out of bed in the morning. There'd be nothing to do. But I think we can get past them because I think we're bigger than that. I think we're professionals. I think we have the leaders who are in those positions, I believe, have the hearts in the right place, and I'd like to see that happen. And I really thank Joe and Cliff to the work that you've done with the radio show to accommodate this dialogue and discussion and really do these live shows from, you know, the events in the industry. And anyway, personally, just as Pete and Sigley, forget all the watchdog stuff. Thank you, guys. You've done a great job and a great service to the industry.
Thank you, Pete. We really appreciate that. And I think that's good closing, if you ask me, guys. I can't beat it. So this is Radio Joe Hughes saying thanks so much to our guest this week. We had a great roundtable here. I'm not going to go back to everybody. Of course, to Pete for helping out and helping pull this all together, to the people that have been running these associations over the years, the volunteers, the management people, everybody. They've all been wonderful to us. Most importantly, to those of you out there listening and getting us emails and feedback and making sure that we continue to get up every day and work toward a better industry and, you know, a better world. So thanks all. We'll see you next Friday at noon for the next broadcast of IAQ Radio.
This has been another IAQ Radio production.